Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to our weekly call that we have every night of the week. Everyone is welcome. This installment is brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, we're going to discuss a most interesting aspect of the law. I'm Michael Edward. I'm your moderator and host for this evening's call, brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. And before we get started with this evening, though, it's very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing you hear in this call tonight may in any way, shape, or form be deemed by you to be legal advice, financial advice, or even advice for the lovelorn. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you are requiring legal advice, I ask you very politely, very sincerely, to hang up the phone. Just disconnect from the call. The reason for this is, and I don't want to sound rude, is that I just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call tonight looking for legal advice has no place or business here or on any of the calls that we do for that matter. No one here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a member of the bar, a lawyer, attorney, in any way, shape, or form. The information provider speaking to you may have gone to law school. They may have graduated law school. They may have even taken the state bar exam and passed it. However, again, no one here on any of these programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or a member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you legal advice. And should you require legal advice, it would be my suggestion, not advice, just a suggestion, to find an attorney, someone your state authorizes to practice on you, to practice law, to give advice in the law. I find it interesting, sad actually, attorneys get to practice on you without being held liable. As for these calls, they're just all some sort of entertainment. Just people saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you and in your particular situation. You might get a little bit of an education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get what folks' opinions are about what they might do were they similarly situated. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they're just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, next to the subject. Let's go over a few things here with Your Remedy in the Law very quickly. Look in the upper right-hand corner. You'll see a picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and a separate place will come up with just two items on it. These two items are certainly most important, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and foremost, on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is a 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known as American jurisprudence, or simply AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or the structure upon which all of law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means that you have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario you might find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process. This is nationally known for its high win rates in traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it is most popularly acquired for. However, that is not really why it's on this page. The reason we have the common law default process up here with the jurisdictionary course is that when you go through this course, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it's kind of a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's the first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate in traffic scenarios being such a common problem in this country today. The common law default process, although known for traffic purposes, has many other remedy applications for most scenarios you might find yourself in where there's no property damage or damage to a person. It's just some government official claiming you've broken a rule and that you can't do it because we said so. Therefore, you must pay a civil penalty. And both of these items are very reasonably priced. The jurisdictionary course has a contribution of $250, and the common law default process has a contribution of $150. On the subject of Your Remedy is in the Law, you're probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you're met with a blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to that site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. And the reason that we're doing this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects as well as many other features and study groups that you'll find at Your Remedy is in the Law. And this is just one of a couple of dozen websites that altogether comprise and are found under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see there, and that we hope that you'll spend some time and explore it at your leisure. Should you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, you can simply email me at mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com or call 1-800-625-4250, and we'll be happy to assist you any way that we're able to. Grassfire Communications. This is formerly known as Statewide Communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's the map of the United States that you can see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables you to speak with one another on a local level based on the very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. It actually is a very easy setup, you know. Click here, click there, put in your zip code here, click next, that sort of thing. And then the assistant will walk you through the remainder of the setup. You'll get to a point where we'll ask you what your interests are. What are you interested in? And this could range from a credit card issue, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of that is as it affects your personal life in one way or another, you should find it at the list on something that's or that's close enough to it. When the setup is complete, the software puts it all together, much like it would you in a social network. Not that it's like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. And it then puts you in contact with people in your local venue that have common interests to you, people you most likely would never have met otherwise. And you found them here. They found you simply because you're both members of Americans Restoring America. One second, please. I was sorry, I was getting some background noise. The idea here is that it's put the power of education and communication back into the hands of the common man. Indeed, here you might go to a county council meeting alone, and now you have your newfound friends who agree with you on a particular stand and on an issue that they now show up with you. And this could be just 5 or 10 people that show up with you, or it could be 500 people that show up with you very easily. If you're in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, well, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions with people that were like-minded, well, you jump online one day and you say, quote, you know, this happened to me today, end quote. Well, if somebody comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do it. I don't think that's fair. End quote. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help for you, will it? Well, the next person chimes in and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch this particular YouTube video, in fact, this group of videos, and then I'd go down to my local courthouse, the county courthouse, which has the law library, and go up to their law dictionary and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, well, those all sound like great ideas. And there's this particular website you should check out for these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then you go and you do some due diligence on what you're reading. It's just people offering suggestions, people's opinions. But if you just do your own due diligence and educate yourself, maybe the farther you get into it, you'll discover that it's really not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've investigated the matter yourself and, well, now you're handling your own affairs. Your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that, and that's all we're trying to do here at Grassfire Communications. It becomes very simple to get people to start talking again amongst themselves. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Grassfire Communications. It's either signing up or it's regular use. And so we're hopeful that you'll pass on this information and pass it around. If that is not an option for you today, well, there's always Freedoms Radio. If you're on the road and you don't want to deal with the card process, your remedy is in the law, and you don't have your username and password with you, well, you can't see the phone number and PIN. Well, by the way, if you want to pick up your membership at yourremediesinthelaw.com, it's very easy. You simply click the register button. So that's your basic information there. You enjoy the first 30 days for free evaluating your remedies in the law. And after that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your bank card or your PayPal. Did you know every single call that we have done since we've started this well over almost two decades ago now, that they're all recorded? There are years of archives to go through. There's a vast wealth of knowledge there as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific live. There's also the question box there at Freedoms Radio where you can type in a question, click submit as long as it's within, you know, certain call hours. Your written question will pop up as long as the moderator screen, and we do what we can to read every single one of these live on the call. So you don't have to get to talk directly with the information provider this way, but you get to bring your question up to the call. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you do, what your circumstances are, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish to. Winding down here, I'd like to go over housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, your buyer beware. Your remedies in the law under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. When you come aboard, you go with an information provider, you're doing just that. This information provider pays for advertising at Your Remedy Is in the Law. And this payment would be an expense to that information provider along with many other expenses that may be associated with your particular product or service, investigation fees and things like that. When you contact us, all we do is listen to your particular scenario. We quickly deduced from a list of folks that honestly most of you would never be able to find on your own, just simply because they can't be found unless, of course, you're one of those alphabet government agencies. And then we make those introductions. Not all our teaching efforts by the information providers are always going to be successful. Everyone always hopes for the best. We plan for the best. And, well, believe you me, we aim for the best. Unfortunately, bad things do sometimes happen. And when they do, well, you have to wrestle with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in your life. Again, we also want to emphasize the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions about that, we welcome you to visit yourremediesinthelaw.com/testimonials, and you'll see what others have to say about these products and services. Now let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. Well, there is none. Not at Your Remedies in the Law anyways. Of course, when you call in and you go with a particular information provider, well, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be strictly a private matter between you and the information provider. And even then, that's a very few and far between situation. There must be extremely extenuating circumstances for that to occur. You're expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. Lastly, pertaining here to all the information providers at Your Remedies in the Law, we've got to remind everyone that all of our speakers at these conference calls are guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something the speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, point, counterpoint. However, please, you must always be civil. The question you pose, if posed properly and then answered properly, well, then we all can learn something from it. Well, that's my rant for this evening, so without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to your host tonight, which is me, Michael Edward. And what I'll be sharing with you tonight, or what Brother John will be sharing with you tonight, is going to be a most interesting topic. This has to do with the Fourth Amendment, and it has to do with know your customer. Anyone here on has bank accounts knows that today you have to, when you open up a new account, you're taken through a know your customer process. So how is the know your customer, the KYC process, how is that interrelated with the Fourth Amendment? You're going to find out. We have two first-time callers tonight, if I may. do a quick bit of housekeeping here. One is from Edmonton, Alberta, ending in 8975. May I have your, just know your first name, please, for this call? I didn't hear you. What? Okay, wait a minute. They're doing their own little thing over there. I guess they're just listening in. Next is Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, ending in 3088. I bet I know who that is. 3088. Ed, is that you? All right, don't worry about it. All right, without further, let's go ahead and turn this call over to Brother John. Go ahead, buddy.
Thank you, Michael. Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly, perfectly.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for that very kind and gracious introduction. Michael's point about the KYC, for those of you who are not familiar with that acronym, Know Your Client or Know Your Customer, they're, that's a big big issue right now. Not just in the U.S. but worldwide. And to that end, they use that as a excuse to violate your privacy and violate your rights in under the Fourth Amendment. Now, they all say it traces back to the U.S. Patriot Act of 2001. There's some challenges with that. The wording in the Patriot Act in Section 201, 6, and 202, and 203, is very, very vague, and it doesn't actually go back to that. And what happens is that the Patriot Act, for those of you who are familiar with it, was a 11th hour and 59 minute late at night, literally. Late at night, a bill that was passed and then signed into office by George Bush, George W. Bush then. And but it doesn't supersede the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. Banks, there's some organizations like the OCC, Office of Currency Control. There's the Anti-Money Laundering Act that they say also allows them the right to monitor. And actually, it doesn't just, quote-unquote, allow them the right. They claim that it demands that the KYC requirements that know your customer, know your client, financial institutions are required to keep records of essential customers' facts. They're required to identify the individuals with authority to make financial moves or transactions, understand special handling instructions, maintain ongoing current and accurate customer information, monitor accounts for suspicion or illegal activities, and report problems to the FINCEN, the Financial Criminal Investigation Network, okay, the Financial Crimes Network. They the underlying legislation that goes with that is the it's called the BSA and the U.S. Patriot Act, the Bank Security Act. Now, the Bank Security Act, what happens is that goes back many, 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 many years to back to the 70s, and what happens is that the Bank Secrecy Act, the which the Office of Comptroller of Currency, OCC, takes care of, what happens is that the Bank Secrecy Act was it prescribes the regulations for conducting activities to ensure that national banks have the necessary controls in place to detect or deter money laundering, terrorist financing, and other criminal acts, and misuse of our, quote-unquote, our nation's financial institutions. However, what happens is that they, without your permission And without, we'll refer to the Fourth Amendment, the right, quote unquote, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizure shall not be violated, comma, no warrant shall issue, comma, but upon probable cause, comma, supported by oath or affirmation, comma, and particularly describing the place to be searched or the person or things to be seized, period. It's very short, and it's very succinct, very candid, very succinct. It says they cannot look into you, they cannot search you, they can't take anything without a warrant. The banks say that now that your information that's on file with them is now public purview, public knowledge, which it's not. And you haven't, unless you've signed something, which some banks in their signature cards, they do have a clause in there that allows them to, quote-unquote, search and use your records for the purpose of KYC and other. And two banks that I've seen the signature cards for actually reference the KYC and the BSA, the Bank Secrecy Act. One of them actually references the Office of Comptroller of Currency, OCC, that and the BSA is the one that supervises the AML, anti-money laundering examinations. Now, the BSA, which is 31 U.S.C. 5311, it establishes reporting requirements for national banks, federal savings and loan associations, federal branches of agencies of foreign banks, and the OCC's implementation of regulations are found in 12 CFR 21.11 and 12 CFR 21.21. The BSA was amended to incorporate the provisions of the U.S. Patriot Act, which requires that every bank adopt a customer identification, a CIP, program as part of its BSA compliance program. Now, when we get to this, we're realizing that a lot of our rights have been swept away with the quote-unquote the Patriot Act. And the relevant sections of the Patriot Act, section 201, 202, 203 to the financial, all relate to wire and mail fraud. But they use these just the same to pry into your finances and your information. And they're saying that the banks, even private banks now, I was on a conference call with two people last week, both of them, who one of them just purchased a small bank institution in Arizona, only four branches, and another one who was getting ready to set one up in Pennsylvania. The one in Pennsylvania is a lady. I used to use the E word, the elderly word, until that was a signpost a few mile markers back for me. So I say a mature lady who has satisfactory wealth to she's a multi-billionaire, and she's looking at setting up a bank network. There's three. She's talking about one head bank office and three branches, total four, which would be about the same size as John's. The gentleman in Arizona that just purchased a small banking institution there. They have both already been visited by individuals from the Office of Comptroller of Currency, and they're demanding that they install computer access for the OCC to have online, secure, coded, dedicated, isolated access to all of their accounts. Both of these individuals says, we'd be happy to provide us with the warrant, so that I cannot be charged with a federal criminal crime. And they said, we're going to file criminal charges against you. It says, not under 18 USC 242, you're not. You will go to jail. And I actually, the lady, she's 61 years old, and we spent about 12 to 14 weeks working on spooling and schooling her on some of the BSA and the OCC, et cetera, the KYC requirements and what to expect. We told her not to go looking for them. They will come looking for you. And she is opening up an institution with her own money. She is not, her intentions are not to do any fractionalized banking under any circumstances. The gentleman in Arizona, he's not quite a billionaire. He's in the 800 million category, and he's considering personally purchasing and buying out every note and having equity in the bank to cover every loan, and so that there is zero fractionalized banking, zero requirement for FDIC. Both of these individuals are, when they get running, I think he'll be up and running before she will. He's probably got 6 to 8, maybe as much as 12 weeks before he gets everything up and running and settled, because he's right now, when he bought everything out, he's only taking care of the internal customers right now only. And he's going to keep the doors closed till he has everything completely off the FDIC, and he's been through the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, / Patriot Act issues with the KYC requirements, and what's happening is that KYC requirements that the that they've been using that are dictated pretty much by the OCC / BSA Act, they're dictating, but they're not, there is no text or no verbiage that requires the use of a Social Security number. In fact, the BSA makes it very clear. It says government-issued photo IDs, like driver's license or passport, et cetera. What happens is that the thing that people don't realize is that the Secrecy Act makes it very, very clear that your Social Security number cannot be required for any transaction, and nobody can demand the Social Security withhold any services for failure to provide your Social Security number, and that's the Secrecy Act. And so the thing that's really important is that people realize that the Patriot Act says use a number like or similar to Social Security, or assign an arbitrary number. And what's happening is that we have so much to cover. By the way, we have so much to cover on this topic that we'll probably stretch this one out over probably minimum of three evenings. We're going to try to get the 40,000 foot tonight, and then fill in a lot more of the blanks next week and the following week. But what happens is that individuals is saying that the banks are saying, well, because the what's dictated by the BSA for the KYC requirements under the OCC, that and I'm using these acronyms liberally so that you get every one of you gets familiar with these, so that eventually you're not going to understand them and remember them all tonight, but eventually you begin to recognize them in those buzz acronyms and those buzzwords as they come through, you'll slowly begin to pick up on what's happening. And so what happens is that the KYC requirements for the banks are they're required to verify customer identity when they open a financial account. The banks are required to perform KYC checks on customers during onboarding. They have to monitor the customer's transactions for suspicious activity. Whoa. Okay, where's the warrant to monitor them for suspicious activity? It says, the banks must report suspicious activity to regulatory authorities, and banks must adapt to regulatory changes. These are all KYC processes. And the KYC process includes ID card verification, face verification, document verification such as utility bills as proof of address, and they also have biometric verification. And the banks must comply with KYC regulations and anti-money laundering regulations to limit fraud. KYC compliance responsibility rests with the banks. Now, is an invasion of your privacy, you're asking, okay, do I actually need to deal with a bank? A lot of people don't. A lot of people send money via Western Union. A lot of people I know some fairly wealthy people that they say, some people say, well, John, if you're doing more than $1,000 or a couple thousand dollars worth of transactions, you know, you have to do it through the bank. Well, not necessarily. I know individuals that keep that kind of cash available. I don't say around. It's just available so that they can pick it up wherever they need to and deliver it to wherever they need to. And I happen to live – actually, I live on an airport. And a lot of folks here, they need to do a large transaction. That I know five individuals that own fairly nice aircraft, you know, Citation 10, two of them own Gulfstreams. One of them owns a Gulfstream 4. The other owns a Gulfstream 5. A couple of King Air 300s, King Air 250. They're not Cessna 150s, you know. And they when they need to do a financial transaction, one of them just recently asked me to hold something while he was loading his aircraft. And he says, and I says, well, this is kind of heavy. He says, well, how much do you think $6.5 million weighs? And I just looked at him and kind of smiled. He snickered and he says, don't worry, it's all in 100s. You know, it's a little easier to spend, but it's still tough to carry, you know, and I just let him go with it. There's a lot of individuals that don't deal with banks. And he says specifically, he says there are individuals that, it's industrial espionage that keep track of the KYC tracking. Some of them even hack into it. Some of them purchase through internal sources the financial information to keep track of who's buying what business or what company. And they monitor. And he says, I can't afford to be monitored when I'm trying to competitively purchase a business that if they find out that I'm going after this business and they watch my finances and see where the deposits are going, and that's all available through internally through DHS and the OCC. And what happens is that I have I have not figured, he says he has not figured out a way to curb that access to what he's doing. And he's had four very large business deals fizzle, meaning that somebody else found out about it, underbid him, and took it away from him. And, or, you know, there's, he described a handful of things that occurred. But, and I don't know why he was glib and, open and transparent to me personally. We're just friends. He, and at the same time, he was, and it curled my teeth to listen to him and the stories about, some of the transactions and why this little satchel had 6.5 in it in cash, you know. And, I guess I looked at him funny or something. He says, "You don't believe me?" And he unzipped it a little bit, and I could see bundles and bundles and bundles of 100s. And they were, you know, everybody knows that a bundle of 100s is $10,000 right there. And, it's, so it doesn't take a whole lot of them to make up 6.5. And, I could carry it with one hand, you know, it wasn't that heavy. But what happens is that the, under the guise of the KYC, all of this type of information is somehow leaking out, and, people's transactions, one of the transactions he was talking about was he was going to buy a piece of property to develop it for condominiums. And, he figured out what happened out the back door, because, on one of the sheets of paperwork when they were bidding on the property, he had put in, or he had pulled out an exact amount of money, and down to not the dollars, but even he put in 59 cents in there. And the bid that took it was exactly $1,000 more, including the decimal places, to 59 cents. And that was his, evidence that somebody had hacked and knew that he had drawn the money out, et cetera, et cetera. And because it was precisely down to the penny, exactly $1,000 more, which was the minimum, raise on the bid. And, he said he can't afford to deal with banks anymore, and he doesn't. He has a couple of credit cards. He says he used to use them for, jet fuel, for gas, but now they keep track of what pump you were at and everything else and how much you got and how far you could go. And when he fuels up his plane, he now pays cash. He doesn't want anybody to guesstimate the range of that and draw a circle on a map what the limit of the cities that he could be going to is, you know, to guesstimate what his strategies are. It's gotten kind of serious. Now, what happens is that the little lady that's starting this bank in Pennsylvania, or this group of banks, or she wants to, she's made it very clear that, and we had a long chat with a DAG, a Deputy Attorney General, who was friendly to the situation. We made it very clear to the DHS KYC people that when they produce a warrant, she will start keeping track of that information. But until they comply with the Fourth Amendment, she says if they ask one more time, she will have them prosecuted. And they, as I'm told by a third party, both of the individuals from the OCC and the one from DHS started laughing until the DAG identified herself and says, "I'm sorry, that's what my job is here. I'm the Deputy Attorney General. Here we are. You either that's unconstitutional. No, this is the Patriot Act. This is, this is United States Code. And she says, yes, you're still required to comply with the Fourth Amendment. All of that is your job. She says, you cannot skip. If you want to comply with the Patriot Act and the KYC requirements, you cannot skip portions of your responsibility. That and getting that warrant, that does just because it's written in there that you've got demands you do it, doesn't mean that the requirement for the warrant is negated. It's still required. And if on my watch, if you commit a felony like this, I will make sure you go to jail. And that was 2 weeks ago, that meeting or whatever you want to call it. And she hasn't been revisited by them yet. We're going to wait and see how that one turns out. Our friend in Arizona, we shared what happened with her. He is going through some very, very serious trials. We shared the same thing. They threatened to arrest him right there. And luckily, we were able to. He called me, and I called our DAG, and our DAG just asked the federal agents that were there. She says, I just want to make sure that this is the Deputy Attorney General, so-and-so, and she gave her name and everything, gave the office, gave her cell phone number to him. It says, if you're arresting this person, I just want to make sure that you've complied with all the requirements so that he's prosecutable. And they were, oh, good. Okay, now, have you already got the warrant? What warrant? The warrant required Fourth Amendment. You guys have these requirements. He says, look, I don't want to have to arrest you guys. If we're talking, it's because we've got a bad guy and we want to arrest him. I don't want to arrest U.S. agents, federal agents. So have you guys complied with your response? Well, nowhere does it say we have to. Oh, absolutely. In the Fourth Amendment, it does. And she bit down hard on all of them. And she says, look, right now, she says, I wasn't going to get on a plane today, but if I have to get on a plane or I have to have somebody else get on a plane to come out and clarify things for you, I will. Now, do you have the warrant for these demands? And they said, no, we don't. And at the moment, they're leaving him alone. We don't know what's going to come up next. They got a little sheepish, and he described that they had been there for 4.5 hours already that day. Hang on a second. Please forgive me. I had a cough there. They after 4.5 hours there, they were gone within 20 minutes. They left. He is personally working with all of the notes, and he said that it's going to take him about 8 to 12 weeks to get through it, because over 3/4 of the notes are currently on file with MERS. And for those of you who don't know what MERS is a four-letter acronym, MERS, Mortgage Electronic Registration Service. And what happens is that MERS has a nasty habit of they used a technology called KIMS, Kodak Image Management System, and now it's PDF. But in the 90s it was KIMS, and now it's PDF, portable data format, documents. And so what happens is that they didn't see a need to keep the original wet signed notes and disposed of most of them in favor of the electronic documents they had. Well, what's happening is that, we've talked to quite a few banks, and over the last couple of years, that's they say we're foreclosing. We've got this. We've got this. Here's a copy of it. And in court, we say, Your Honor, anybody with $5 can get an extra dollar per page, or 20 cents or 30 cents per page, depending on which clerk it is, can get a copy of that. And as a matter of fact, I have a copy of your note, Your Honor, right here. I would like to foreclose on it. Oh, wait a minute. This doesn't have your original website and signature on it, and neither does that one. So we object to the use of that. And if they want to use a photocopy of a note to foreclose on it, we're happy to provide them photocopies of currency to pay for it. And however, if they want to foreclose on a real note, we're happy to give them real currency, and we better see the real note. Okay. And we've actually, it's rare lately that you can actually get into a hearing where you can actually say that anymore. The attorneys that are working for a lot of these banks, including one of the primary participants in that program is BANA, Bank of America National, BANA. And we've had some of our students that have had wonderful experiences with BANA. And I say that very, very sarcastically. BANA is one of the most cruelest, unkind. The attorneys, they pay a lot of money to get motions heard out of court so that they don't actually end up in court. And some of the judges, we even had one student that the judge who was ruling on the case, we had to point out the fact that at one point he was a junior partner with the law firm that were funny, I guess. and he hadn't recused himself yet. Oh, embarrassment. Ouch. But what happens is that he's going through and clearing all of the mortgages, and he's stopping. They've asked him for KYC updates, and he says, "Well, right now we're doing a minimum thing because I'm converting all the notes to my own." He says he's carrying them personally. He, his wife, and his board of directors, which are three sons and two daughters. There's a total of seven, the husband, wife, and five children. And they're converting everything to their own assets. And he says when it gets done, he'll still have over $240 million in cash equitable assets. That they'll be able to operate the bank. But he's trying to set up a new type of bank, and one that cannot be controlled with through the FDIC or any of those other requirements, and one that does not have the responsibility. He's trying to avoid the responsibility of the KYC requirements. He's also presently, one thing that I have to admire him for, and we were working on this a little while back, but he's trying to set up his own credit card clearing and et cetera, his situation. And so what's happening is that he's actually right now setting up a 201, 202, a 103, and a 507 category credit card / bank transaction, so that it'll be similar to a Visa card. But he's working with some banks in Rome, in Zurich, and Istanbul, and they are trying to work out so that these individuals, the banking that they do, will not be required. They will not have required oversight by the EU, Interpol, the UN, the FDIC, the Federal Reserve, the BIS, Bank of International Settlements, etc. They're trying to get away from that. In fact, he is the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, which was originally developed for the purpose of mitigating and litigating war reparations, crime and payments subsequent to World War I and World War II, primarily with dealing with Germany. But now the BIS, it's owned by 64 central banks in 66 countries, because a couple of countries are using common central banks. They deal with a lot of the know your customer or know your client internationally material. We here in the U.S. have a very, very nice Mr. Backup. We have the Fourth Amendment. For all of you that are on this call that have had funds seized, et cetera, not been able to get them back out because they, quote unquote, were having a problem with them. There are three individuals in the last 14 months that had $1 million or more, excuse me, that by exercising the a phone call with the agency, one of them was a sheriff's department in Alabama, the couple was traveling. They had $1.26 million in cash in zipper pouches underneath the seat of the passenger seat of the car. And they had sold their house for cash. This jurisdiction says, look, they kept the car. Their Chevy's is a Suburban or a Yukon Denali kind of thing, but they kept that, and they incarcerated them for 42 days while they, you know, were trying to get this. And what happened was, is we got the DAG to give them a call saying, hey, look, this potentially is a federal crime. Here's a state agency. I would like the details so that we can look into prosecution. And they says, oh yeah, it's 1.26. They were real proud. They offered to meet her. They did a Microsoft Teams meeting. The sheriff and the sheriff deputies, three deputies were on the call. And he says, okay, now I need the warrant where you seized all this. Well, we're not required to. It's a forfeit asset forfeiture. Excuse me, gentlemen. Right now I want to prosecute and incarcerate criminals. I don't want to prosecute and have to incarcerate law enforcement officials. Those asset seizures still require that you comply with the Fourth Amendment. That's, you know, yes, you can seize them, and you're still required to do that. You realize that's a federal felony for all of you. You know, the couple was out of jail without the judge's order being issued the following morning. The sheriff called the judge and told him what was happening, what she said and everything, and said that she needed to have everything the following morning. She's going to either prosecute the couple or she's going to prosecute them. And the judge, they were looking for a ex post facto warrant to legitimize their activity. A friend of mine, a retired chief justice, somebody that I may happen to know in Alabama, shared with me that this judge actually reached out and said, what's going on? And he says, whatever you do, have nothing to do with it. The couple was released. Since then, they've gotten 1.22 back. They're still 0.04 short on the cash because the department had already started using the cash, and they have not been able to restore the couple. The car they had sold, it was only a year and a half old vehicle. They had sold it at auction. One of the sheriff's deputies' daughter-in-laws purchased it for less than $4,000, and it was over a $100,000 vehicle because it had all the bells and whistles and everything else on it. And he personally had to mortgage his house and his daughter's, the car that they resold it and mortgaged the house to replace the vehicle rather than them go to jail. Okay. Now, there's a couple of cases like that that have occurred. Now, those three were all in excess of $1 million seizures. The KYC, everything, yeah, they can do the Patriot Act, and the OCC can do this, and the OCC can jump in and the all of this. Okay. Now, what happens is that when all of these jump in and the we end up with the mandatory KYC requirements from the Bank Secrecy Act and demonstrated or administrated by the Office of the Comptroller of Currency, and that's the OCC, Office of Comptroller of Currency. They, Office of Comptroller of Currency, prescribes regulations. They make it up as they go. There is no Senate, or excuse me, who makes the law? The House. And when the funding, you know, and then they send it to the Senate, okay? None of this has any congressional oversight at all. The Bank Secrecy Act, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That and the AML, the anti-money laundering regulations, et cetera, under 31 U.S.C. 5311 and 12 CFR 2111 and 2121, what happens is that the CIDs for them, the customer identification programs, they all of that, that is kind of litigated. It's referenced. The OCC prescribes how they carry it out, and these regulations that are being tagged on you unconstitutionally without any congressional oversight that make you a criminal. It's what happens is that by asking the correct questions by potentially the correct people, not necessarily just yourself, a lot of that is getting washed away and wiped away. We're learning some things that are very, very critical. This tonight, I'm almost out of time. So I'll note that this is part one of three on this topic here. We're going to cover a handful of further topics and educate you on where a lot more of this is coming from, so that when we get into the third portion of it, that you can better understand how to work with it. And I say how to work with it because this is like a running race. Security, home security is like a running race. Okay, you install a burglar alarm on your doors and windows. Okay, they figure out how to affect that burglar alarm, or they find out that if they go to the power panel and shut the power off, that the burglar alarm was powered by the house power. And so having a, now you got to have a Mr. Backup Power. And now having a Mr. Backup Power, they go and dike the, it goes over the phone line, so they just dike, or the cable line, so they just dike the cable, and the alarm never goes out. Okay, and the local alarm just is all that goes out, and when you hear the bell ringing, they go pour, they take a can of shaving cream and squirt it into the alarm box, and it goes. But see, the thing is that being successful at security is a running race. The moment you throw your hands up and say, look, I'm winning, whoosh, all the other runners just passed you by. Security, knowing what you're doing with your money, it's the same thing. Trying to stay ahead of those who would take it from you. It's like, you know, we talked about on the deeds and the property, knowing how to do it correctly and stay ahead of the latest threats is vitally, vitally, vitally important to you. So with that, I invite you back to the next 2 weeks. Next week I have a potential medical surgical event. Barring not being able to make it, that would bump it off. But we invite you back to the to follow up on part two and part three. And at this juncture, thank you for the honor and the privilege of serving the Most High King and serving America and restoring America beside each and every one of you. And now we're going to open it up for question and answer. If you if you're able to stay to the subject matter topic, thank you. If you can wait till later on in the Q&A session to take off topics, that's also helpful. But just the same, we'll do everything we can to answer any questions that you have. Thank you, one and all. Back to you, Michael.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very much. For those of you listening on Freedoms Radio, you'll notice in the center right of your monitor a rectangle of a silhouette laying on its side. It's empty. Left-click inside of that rectangle and type away your comment or question. Underneath that rectangle to the right is a place to put your name, some other contact information, and just hit submit. When you hit the submit, your question or comment will pop up on my end, and I'll be happy to lend my voice to your comment or question. For those of you who have dialed in to this call tonight directly, and we have a good set of people here tonight. It's good to see you all. Just simply press *2 on your keypad, *2 on your keypad. That raises your hand on a board that I'm looking at, and I'll be happy to unmute your phone. And then you and Brother John can speak directly to your comment or question. So I'm doing some refreshing here, waiting for somebody to press *2 or make their comments. Give it a minute. What is your, while we're waiting for this to populate, what is your overview going to be for the next 2 weeks that you talked about, the second and third? Where are you going to go specifically with that?
The second part of this finishes the sources of all of the legislation or mislegislation, and we're going to go into how to correct the mislegislation and identify if those acts were actually criminal and that the legislators should be prosecuted and how to prosecute them. And then in the third one, we're going to identify what the people can do to address these concerns, not just at a national level, but at their personal banking level.
Super. That is very exciting to me. I'd like nothing better than to have accounts without Social Security.
Oh, by the way, on part two, we're also going to give the rank and all of our team how to, if they decide they don't necessarily want to try to pursue a legislator criminally, we'll show them how to pursue them civilly. So if somebody got laid off from their job and they need an income opportunity, well, they can pick up one of these legislators and, you know, take their boat and their extra house away from them.
pick them up by the ankles, upside down, shake them.
Well,
hey, look,
yeah,
there goes the quarter.
Hey, there you go. You know, for somebody who wants an income opportunity, you know, they let's give it to them.
Absolutely. If we don't have any questions, ladies and gentlemen, we're not going to be on the call much longer tonight. And here we go. Ed, thank you for popping up. I appreciate that. And Jennifer Sue, I appreciate that as well. So let's start there with Brother Ed. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, John. Oh, wait. Am I still muted?
Good evening, Ed. How are you doing? Yes, Ed.
I guess you hear me, eh? Pardon?
Yes, Ed.
Okay. Question in terms of originally with the dichotomy of U.S. legislative law applying in a narrow way to states of the Union and applying absolutely the territories and possessions of the United States, would that come into play at all here with what you're discussing?
Okay. Phrase the question. Can you rephrase the question a little bit?
You know how U.S. legislation is used either to rule over the states in terms of their functions were constitutionally empowered, and then according to Article 1, Clause, or Section 8, Clause 17, 18, and then Article 4 again, it rules absolutely over its own proprietorially owned territory and other things that it owns as property. Does that come into play here with the banks at all?
Okay. Presently, that's a very, very good question. I don't see that there is a difference between the two at this juncture. It applies equally because everything that we've learned and there's a rumors allegation that I spent 4 hours and 31 minutes on a phone today with a DAG, and I spent 2 hours and 19 minutes and 1 hour and 43 minutes on calls yesterday with two different DAGs on this particular topic. At this juncture, I do not see that sways this topic one to the right or to the left.
So the law just applies to all banks within the circle of federal law.
That's correct. And the fact that the Fourth Amendment applies to everybody, and some people say, well, it doesn't. There are certain issues. There are certain groups that it doesn't apply to. Well, they just nullified their authority by saying that. Now there's some other challenges here, and we're gonna to really do this topic justice, we would need 8 nights because one of the nights would be dealing strictly with treaty law. You understand what that is, right? That when the U.S. President signs a treaty, that all U.S. citizens are bound to that. You understand that? That's part of the original Constitution. So what happens is that there's challenges that that go far, far beyond that, and whether they're American nationals or U.S. citizens, it all still applies. You still there, Ed? Is everybody still there?
I still
Hello?
Show I'm connected.
Okay.
Ed,
you there? Well, it's good to hear your voice.
Okay. Anyways, we'll just go on. Ed, if you want to finish up what you're saying, just press star 2 again. So we have Jennifer next, followed by Jim. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi. I have four kind of things. The first one is, is anyone able to open a bank account, especially a trust bank account and a Corp Sol, with in either of these two banks, or do you have to be like a billionaire to sort of use their bank?
Jennifer, presently we're finding out that as of about 22 months ago, non-statutory trusts are coming under fire as far as the banking goes. And what's happening is that the banks have a choice who they can or will or want to do business with or not to do business with. And so what happens is that Corp Sols, I haven't seen anybody have a problem with corporation souls. There are some banks that I just got a notice from a bank that they one of my charitable religious trusts. They asked me for additional information, and that was part of the final beneficial ownership paperwork, and I explained to them that they that had been temporarily there was an injunction against any enforcement of that for the whole U.S. and they still put my that particular charitable religious trust on hold. It's frozen. I have four other charitable religious trusts with that same bank that they didn't touch. So I haven't found a rhyme or reason yet. But if it's a Corp Sol, the bank haven't seen any problems with that at all. The charitable religious trust, I've seen some challenges with that. And if you like, that's a fairly deep subject, and that's going to require a little bit more attention. If you'd like to make an appointment with that, and we can look. Have you had a problem getting a bank account for a CRT yet?
No, but I just wouldn't mind moving to a different type of bank that isn't tracking me.
Okay. Well, presently they are all tracking. I say all because as I said, these two that I'm currently have the honor and the privilege of having some vague association with, they propose to possibly be the first banks that I will know of that do not keep track of everything. Okay. So it's a, so just FYI, I haven't found a bank that doesn't keep track of everything and doesn't divulge it all. And that, everything I learned, remember I commented that there was a conference call that was an hour and 56 minutes yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
She made it clear that she was accessing through their network my personal banking records. She says, well, here, let me look at yours. She pulled up everything, and it was seconds, and she started reading off. Okay.
Yeah, I was just wondering what these new banks that were not going to be tracking, whether they would open a trust and a Corp Sol account. But, that's probably for a future question.
I don't have an answer on that, but I will keep my eye open for that one for you.
Well, thank you. Sorry. Now, at one point, Michael was talking about, I think it was a bag you could keep a gun in a car, a certain type of bag that police weren't allowed to open.
The bank, the locked bank zipper pouch.
Oh, locked bank zipper.
I have two of them myself.
Can you use them for cash?
Yes. Okay. One of them literally, we turned it inside out and flame sprayed the inside with lead. It's basically turned it into an RFID zipper pouch. Now I found out that they sell them. You know, you don't have to go through the gymnastics that I did. But I went over to a friend's place that years ago we set up a flame spray setup with him. And we just sprayed hot lead on the inside and turned it inside out, and you know, and we actually went over to the bank, to a Chase bank, and put a bundle of 100s and a bundle of 50s in there. The bank manager, we were friends, and she thought it was kitschy trick to try, and we ran it through there. We ran the standard pouch, the untreated one and the treated one. She was able to see everything, you know, read how much was in the untreated. The treated one was, and then she says, but John, you don't have to go through all that trouble. They sell these, and I can order you one. You know, and so I felt kind of sheepish because I Jennifer Sue, I actually thought I did something kind of cool and novel. Well, not so novel. So much for my ego there.
But do the police know they're not allowed to open them or not?
Oh, I was on walkabout on the East Coast, you know, the early mid part of last year. And I was on walkabout for 12 and a half, almost 13 weeks. Actually, it was almost 14 weeks. We had some taillight damage, got stopped a couple of times in the van that I was driving for a taillight, because the lens was cracked, and at night you could see white light, you know, coming out the side. But twice they got myself out of the vehicle, and the guy's zipper pouch, he says, this feels like there's a gun in here. I says, really? You know, and he says, open this. I says, I'd be happy to. And I just stood there. And he says, well, open it. I says, I'd be happy to. And I didn't move. He goes, well, I'm waiting. I says, the moment you have a warrant,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if you think there's something illegal or unconstitutional going on here, it'll be my honor and privilege to comply with your request the moment you have a warrant. And right now, it's not that late, and electronic, you've got a PDT in your car. It'll take you less than 20 minutes to electronically get a warrant. You know, I says, and then it'd be my honor and privilege to open it for you. And I was just as nice and sweet as mom and apple pie. I says, but you don't have probable cause, do you? He says, well, I feel there's a gun in here. I says, I says, can I reach? I tell you what, how about if you reach into the ashtray there and pull one of those plastic cards out? And the ashtray? Well, you know, it's the center. We don't really use it for cigarettes. He reached in there and he says, and it had one of the little plastic cards says, dot, dot, dot. Your Honor, where in the Constitution is sued my right to keep bear firearm in that schoolyard or slash other or your court, let alone your courtroom? And turned it over, and it says 18 U.S.C. 242. He looked up 18 U.S.C. 242, And he started to put the card back. I says, no, you can keep that. And I says, are you saying that there, and I asked him, I says, are you saying that there's a law that you would attempt to enforce that that would override the constitutional right to keep bear a firearm? That's, you know, and I asked that question after he looked up on his phone 18 U.S.C. 242, deprivation of rights under color of law, and realized it was a second-degree federal felony. His partner was very quiet after that. His partner didn't say anything else. He says, sir, and do you know why we stopped you? And I says, it'd be an honor and privilege to find out. And, you know, it's always, you know, hey, if there's something that I can correct to, you know, to make my driving performance better, bring it on, you know. And they both says, are you for real? I says, yeah, you know, bring it on. He says, they walked me back. He showed me the crack in the taillight. You know, and, you know, and we laughed. We left famous friends. And I had about 24, 26 of those cards in the little thing in the center of the dash. And they left with all of them. He didn't know that I had a whole – I said, you know, he said, the other guy asked for one. I said, well, here, would you like some? He says, we're going to get – well, I said, what are you going to do with them? He says, we're going to give them out to our friends and the other officers. You know, and he didn't know that I had three quarters of a box of them in the back seat, you know, just sitting there. But, you know, but I, in every car I drive, I keep those so that if there's any question ever that I can let them get the card out, especially if I'm outside the vehicle, you know, and it's just self-explanatory. I don't have, you know, I said, well, that's a good question. I tell you what, would you like an answer? And I tell you what, it's on that plastic card right there by the dash or on the dash, you know. And well, sometimes.
When are you going to send me some cards?
Do you want some?
Sure.
Okay. I guess, Michael,
here's what we can do. John, send me one to where I'm at, or if you can get someone to properly scan or a good high DPI scan or a good photograph, I'll take that, and then we'll put it on the website. People can just download it. They can go
you
to,
know what?
They can...
if, Michael, if I order a box and just have them delivered to you, if people sent – mailed you a self-addressed stamp envelope folded up inside of another envelope,
sure,
so that you could send one back or half a dozen or whatever they asked for.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to do that?
Of course.
Wonderful. Jennifer,
yep.
Keep asking. I should have the money to be able to afford to make that order by Thursday or Friday. And the printer that I use is online. It's called VistaPrint. And I don't do paper cards anymore. I do plastic. At the Republican Senatorial Convention, somebody came up to me and says, "You're him." And I says, "What do you mean?" He says, "Everybody, we were in the rules-making session at the Senatorial Convention, and and I says, pardon me? He says, in 1992, you gave me this card. And he opens up his wallet. And this paper card had been not just crumpled and used, but had been laminated and re-laminated twice. And he, you know, and ever since I saw that guy's card, I don't, you know, and then a couple of other people said, we know other people that have those cards. And, Tommy Thomas, who was back then in 92, who was the sheriff for Harris County, stood up and said, look, I've still got two paper cards in my wallet, and they were partially rumpled. And after I saw that, and he's the sheriff, he used to be the sheriff. And, the sheriff's here, there was an evening session that there was, sheriffs from 17 counties that in Texas. And we gave out a couple. They all wanted them. You know, I had 3.5 boxes in the van. We gave them all out. The only ones I had left were the ones that I had in my hotel room. But the sheriffs took them, and they were handing them out to their. And these are the sheriffs, not the deputy sheriff, not somebody. I mean, these are the guys, the elected officials that were taking them. You know, and so right now I'm down to about less than 100 or 200 in this box that I got here, and plus I've still got some paper ones that I could, you know, that I could hand out. But lately I just do the plastic coated. They've got almost the same weight as a credit card does, you know, and thickness and feel, and except there's nothing raised on them. But yeah, they're I'll see if I can.
I can Zelle Michael. I can Zelle Michael whatever the cost is for mine.
Oh, for the cards. Well, here,
yeah.
Actually, hold on a second. Let me look here.
Hey, John. Why don't you send me the link to the place that you get it. And then I'll add that to it. I can put it all together. Just send me that stuff, and the students, the people on the call, they can just click the link and order it themselves.
But I might not want a whole box, and you know, I might want 10 or 20
yeah,
or 30.
Well, hold on a second. I'm logging on to my Vista print account right now. And so what I'm going to do is I'm looking to see if I okay, here's my cart. I've got it looks like I've got an order with my military discount and the tax. I was ordering 2,000 of them, but the order is like $688.99 plus the shipping and the tax and stuff. But with my military discount, including the tax, and then they comp me the shipping, it's $596.66. It's like $600 for 2,000 of these. Let me see. I'm going to change it down to 1,000 and see what they charge for that. That's
a lot.
That's 362. Well, I pass them out in boxes of 250 and 500, Jennifer. That's, you know, yeah. Let's see, for a box of 250, it's 141. So,
okay.
And you know what? For four times that, I can get twice as much by ordering 2,000. You know what I'm going to do? If you want to make a donation to chip in on that, I'm going to see if I can get enough money together tomorrow or the next day here to it's just under $600 to get 2,000, which is you get twice as much over the buying it at the 250 each price. And that way, you know what, I'll call these guys up and I'll see if I can have the like half shift to Michael and half shift to me, and that way or a part shift to Michael, and and then what I'll do is I'll give Michael I'll help Michael set up a account that we can use for ARA, and that way he can order them direct when he runs out, and that way, you know, because I hate being the keeper of the clues, you know. I like for everybody to have access to everything I have access to.
Right. Well, that's good. I have one more thing.
You're gonna maybe send Michael a donation.
Yes. Yeah, but okay. Maybe someone else on the call wants to join in. You know, maybe they
Anybody else on the call, if you would like some of these cards, please send Michael a donation, and let's I'll see if I can get these coming in the next day or two, a couple of days. Okay,
sure.
Back to you, Jennifer.
I just wanted to say that I took a large amount of money out of a bank a couple of years ago. And they said, oh, well, you really should have police protection as soon as you leave the branch. You know, you should have some policemen there that follow you home. And I'm like, no, thank you. And if you tell anyone, I'll know who told them, because you and me are the only people who know I have the money. So I really don't need protection. And if I have police pulling me over who can just take my money, then I'll know who told them.
That's kind of logical thinking and kind of true, Jennifer. Not totally. They have portable scanners now that are the size of your smartphones that if they're standing by the door of the bank and you walk out with $10,000, they know.
Right. Uh-huh.
They had the police officers now.
But why would
every department that I know that uses those scanners denies it. Nobody will admit it that they have them. They say no, we can't have those things, and they're right, they can't. But unofficially, their officers have purchased those scanners, and I know where to purchase them, and they're kind of pricey, but they can pass the scanner over a mail parcel and tell you how many nickels are in it. And if you don't have the bundles wrapped in foil, preferably lead foil, but if you don't have a lead film bag inside the priority mail flat rate envelope or the flat rate box, they can scan it.
Right. I sent some film in one of those boxes so that the scanning didn't wreck the film overseas, and they had opened it up and looked at it anyway, so it doesn't let you trying to put it in one of those. If they can't see it, they're going to open it. But also, the other thing is, I was just wondering what the best place to keep cash is in your house. Should it be a safe
keep
under the
what?
Ground or... Cash
keep
or gold or silver, like wealthy things.
Well, if you happen to are considering keeping something safe at home, I don't want to know that. Now, I will say that the lead foil film bags, and now they have the cashier bank zipper pouches that are RFID. It says RFID proof, okay? And that's
right.
That's what you're looking for. But if you have those, and whether you slip it underneath the bottom of your water heater or in the ceiling between the beams, between the insulation or if you buy one of those Home Depot old work boxes and then take a drywall saw and cut what looks like another electrical outlet hole in the wall and then put the work box in there roll up your cash and put it behind the switch or the electrical outlet that's not connected, or some people they take an active plug and they take the screws out and maybe it's got a shallow electrical box and they change it for a deep box and they roll up their cash and put it behind the existing electrical outlet and so that the waffle iron's plugged into it anyway, and But then nobody knows that there's $100 tucked in behind the waffle iron plug, you know. I don't want to know what you're doing.
Right.
They, some people have these little stands and rods in their bathroom that hold up a mirror, you know, a makeup mirror, this or that. I don't want to know that you unscrewed the top and the bottom, or that you did that to the lamp stand and unscrewed the stand from the base and then tucked it in on the base of the lamp stand. And I don't want to know these things, okay? You know, if you do anything like that, or if you have like a transistor radio that has four screws in the back and you take it off and just temporarily cuff, you know, two $100 bills in there, I don't want to know that, okay?
Well, thanks. I mean, it's not like I have anything to hide at the moment. I'm just hoping I will.
Right. But yeah. Like I said, you know, and if you're one of those people that has one of those cheapy brooms that have the hollow broom handle and you unscrew it and you tuck it up inside the broom handle, I don't want to know that, okay? I don't want to know any of that. You know, it's a please, you know, or if your granddaughter's bicycle, you know, you take the hand grip off and you tuck, you know, the three $20 bills in there and then put the handle back on. I don't want to know that. Or take the seat off, you know, take that one bolt loose and take the seat off and tuck it down in the post and put it back on. I don't want to know that, okay? You know, and whatever you do, don't do what this neighbor two doors down did when I was growing up. Billy, his tire on his Schwinn Stingray, he let the air out, tucked all three $1 bills and his collector $2 bill in around the tube and then reinflated it. And it wasn't until the bike got stolen and we got it back that Billy told everybody where his money was. And he went, because he was checking that tire, he deflated it to see that his $5 was still there. I don't want to know, you know, so Jennifer Sue, I don't want to know any of that, okay? You know, and especially whatever you do, do not pile up a bunch of paper cups and put $2 or $3 bills in between each paper cup, you know, and have the stack on the bottom there so that people don't, you know, when they go in to get a coffee cup that, you know, they don't get one that actually gets close to the money. I don't want to know that, all right?
All right. I won't tell you then.
Okay. Good. I'm not supposed to use, by the way, everybody, I'm not supposed to use Jennifer's name out loud, so I'm not going to.
John, you've got too much time on your hands.
Okay, bye.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Good night. Good night, Lady Jennifer.
Okay, next is Jim from Arizona. Go ahead, Jim.
Good evening, Brother John. How are you this evening?
Jim, it's good to hear your voice. Hey, I'm doing better than I have in a long time. I've actually had my voice for 3 days now. I've been getting over completely over the pneumonia, and I've had my voice for 3 days solid. It's great. I almost don't know what to do with myself.
Well, good. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, where's James Brown?
So I just caught the last 20 minutes of your class tonight, and I heard you mention a case that I've been involved in, and I'm a little curious if some of the discussion that you were sharing earlier this evening might be applicable in the case that I still have sitting out there that hasn't gone anywhere.
Jim, the wheels working on your case have never stopped. If I can come to a place where we can find a point to go, a path to go from point A to point B, let me rephrase that. I have a way to go from point A to point B. Michael and I have talked about it in depth. We talk about you behind your back, in front of your face. We use your name in vain all the time, you know. And there's a project called Legal Assistant that we're going to need a boiler room of people to give attention to mirrors. And we've got to do it correctly, and we're going to have to use some barred attorneys, but we got to have a lot of legal assistants and some paralegals working on this one to do yours, to correct it. And then go back and get a judgment that would, and I think at one time you were willing to consider just being compensated and get a new place rather than go back to the old place. Michael and I have not, and the rest of the team have not stopped thinking about your case specifically, ever.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. In about 2 months, it'll be 4 years since that property was unlawfully sold. And I'm sorry, 4 years since I was forced off the property at gunpoint, and 2 years prior to that is when the property was sold. So it's been a bit of a long road.
Yeah,
but I have a lot of faith. So.
Well, remember, though a man seeks an audience with a judge or a king or a president, it's from the Father in heaven that he gets justice. And so the thing about your situation is, and, you know, it still crushes my spirit sometimes, is that there are so many other people out there that are dealing with the same tyrannical issues. We have somebody in New Jersey right now that another student that you know, that we have the same challenge, and a mirrors, multiple mirrors reassignments. They were playing the shell game with his deed. And you know who I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
By the way, she's doing better. She kind of lost a little bit of hope about a month and a half back, you know, when that came to a head. And we talked about and worked out an alternate plan, 37 Charlie. And if you she has a lot more respect for him now, because she knows that if Michael and I drop over dead, you know, or a hurricane takes us both away, that they still have an alternate plan, 37 Charlie, so that they're not going to lose their house. And Michael and I have generated multiple alternate plans to try to take care of them. And, so we're, you know, it's not easy. But I know very busy, boss. Lead my reps. You know, understand good English? I know very busy. we just found out some stuff. I got some paper today that, a judge made a ruling in something that directly affects him. And it's the same, it's almost the same situation. We're going to try to get their property out of harm's way before we go after mirror, you know, get that done before we go after mirrors. And, the mirrors thing, that is just downright wrong. It's evil. It's out of the pit of hell. And it's going to take a team of people like you, him, all the other information providers, Michael and I, to get after that. And it's going to take more than that. And we think we have a benefactor right now I was hoping to have to go to the Apple this Friday to meet with them to finish making the proposal. But the benefactor himself is in the hospital with double pneumonia right now. I got a call from his wife this morning that he was admitted to the hospital last night with double pneumonia. So we're holding off on, you know, we have to hold off until we have the resources. But that's and yes, good old Mr. Gavel ML, and you know who I'm talking about. we're still preparing some entertainment for him.
Oh, good. Well, you know, we want good people in those positions, and, you know, whatever it takes to make sure that we have the right people there is what really matters.
You are so correct.
Yes.
Moving on.
I mean,
go ahead.
Yeah. So I have some information I'd like to get on a call with you and Michael, some research that some brilliant people have assembled, and I'd like to bring some of this to your attention, and it goes pretty deep into some of the banking things that go on, and, you know, maybe in the maybe early next week we can get on a phone call and I can share, you know, some of that with you and Michael, and consider that as another strategy in addition to what already is being worked on. So, that's really all I had tonight. It's so good to hear your voice, and I apologize I wasn't on the call earlier.
Oh, no. It's an honor and a privilege to hear your voice and have you on the call, brother. Thank you. Appreciate you very much. Back to you, Michael. He's got to find the mute button.
I think he went to bed.
Is that what the snoring was? All right, so I just checked Feedom's Radio. Nobody has raised their hands there or made a question or comment. So I think that brings us home for this evening, Brother John. And Brother John is going to do the call next week, most of you have received a text from me today. That's why you're here on the call. I will be sending out a text next week about the same time with an update that Brother John will be on the call. If you don't receive a text from me, it'll be a recording that you'll be listening to. Any closing comments, John?
Once again, my fellow servants of the Most High King, it is truly an honor and a privilege to serve the Most High King beside every one of you in an effort to restore his, with a capital H, his precepts and his law to our country. Thank you. And thank you all of you, some of you, and you know who I'm talking about, participated in different situations that may have contributed to number 47. Thank you. Remember this, regardless of what number 47 does, the heart of the king or the president is in the hand of the Lord. He directs it like a water course, wherever with which whom he, with a capital H, pleases. So we've had a time where maybe we were getting a little bit of what we deserved in 46. And now the Father's letting us get some things done. Let's all band together, get on our knees, and ask and beg him for his continued direction and strength, especially for number 47. Thank you.
All righty. Personally, I think that we as a nation owe Sodom and Gomorrah an apology. So, with that having been said, tomorrow night we will be opening with a limited liability company that Mr. Slevin, creates uniquely the original creators of this LLC have never, from birth to day, have never had a Social Security number. They came into this world with a home birth. It was the birth was published as an announcement in the newspaper. The family Bible contained the witnesses to this birth. Everything under the American common law that was required. And because of this unique arrangement, also in the state through which this limited liability company was organized, with their unique laws, there is no tax liability or requirement to keep records. Of course, any businessman that doesn't keep records is, you know, stupid. But you have to have that. You can't determine trends and get ahead of the ball unless you keep records. But you're not required to for the IRS's purposes. This goes hand in glove with Justice Beshear's golden horseshoe that we offer. And it allows you to come into initiating the golden horseshoe much, much less expensively to get involved with that. And then it just segues into it when you can afford to do it. The whole thing. So that's tomorrow night. It'll be a recording, and I'll be there to monitor the call. And when you press star 2 on the keypad with your questions, I will then kill the call, recording of the call, and go live to answer your questions. One of the things that I've had a pleasure of these many years, near 30 years, is that, as you well know, when you engage with an information provider, I am putting the call together. So I've had the honor and the pleasure of auditing tens of thousands of calls in this period of time. So I've developed a knowledge base where I'm able to oftentimes articulate the, if you want to call it, the selling points, if you would, of what a particular information provider offers. Whether it's Brother John here or Mr. Slevin or Justice Beshear, whatever, I can wax on for a long time and basically cover 95-98% of your questions without having to bother them. However, if you do have a question where you'd like to ask directly, we can put that together as well for you. So anyways, tomorrow night is Mr. Slevin's Limited Liability Company. Hope to see you there. Till then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.